Mr. Price.
Your Honor, and may it please the Court, my name is Matthew Price on behalf of Petitioner RRD. The Board rejected Petitioner's asylum claim on the ground that he was specifically targeted for retaliation, but it erred in viewing that retaliation as solely and necessarily personal in nature. The statute says that an applicant can be eligible for asylum so long as a protected status is one central reason for the persecution, not the sole reason, not the primary reason, and indeed this Court has said not even necessarily the secondary or tertiary reason. And the Board failed to faithfully apply that standard in the light of facts that are essentially undisputed. Here the immigration judge and the Board credited, but then ignored, abundant evidence that Petitioner was targeted by drug cartels as part of a policy of silver or lead by which the cartels take violent actions against honest officers in order to intimidate others, to stop police recruitment, and to be able to continue their activities without police interference. Evidence included Petitioner's own testimony, which again the IJ and the Board credited but then ignored, as well as documentary evidence concerning the silver or lead policy. And the Board and the immigration judge failed to consider that evidence at all, and if they had considered it, they could not rationally have concluded that a personal dispute was the only reason for the persecution that Petitioner suffered. The Board's fundamental error was ignoring the context in which the threats made against Petitioner and the assassination attempt on him were made. It looked at those events in a vacuum without recognizing the political and social context in which they took place. And that flies in the face of this Court's precedents. The way the Board should have approached this case is illustrated by this Court's decision in Sarhan. And that was a case involving a Jordanian woman who engaged in sexual activity, and her brother tried to kill her in order to preserve the family's honor. Now, if you look at those facts in isolation from any context, you could conclude, well, that was a personal dispute. It was a dispute between a brother and a sister. And indeed, that was how the Board decided the matter. But this Court reversed, and it said, no, you can't look at that event, that persecution in isolation. You need to understand it within the context of a broader social and political environment in which there are other women like her in her social group who similarly receive that kind of persecution. And so it wasn't purely a personal dispute, but it was also persecution on account of social group membership. Now, the context here shows that the targeting of Petitioner was not purely personal at all. And I just want to point to a few facts in the record that were simply, again, they were credited by the IJ and the Board, but then ignored in their analysis. The first is that Petitioner began receiving threats in 1996, soon after he joined the force. And he was transferred repeatedly from city to city. So he wasn't targeted as the result of any particular investigation he conducted. He was targeted because of a lot of the past conduct he had engaged in that was like other officers in his social group who had similarly engaged in past conduct of that kind and who the cartels sought to harm in order to pursue this policy of silver or lead.
Do these cartels operate in conjunction? I mean, there are several cartels, aren't there?
There are several cartels, Your Honor. That's right.
So this is a blanket cartel effort to do the silver or lead. Is that some kind of a coordinated, or do all of them do it, or just some of them?
My sense, Your Honor, is that it's not coordinated, but all the cartels have adopted a similar kind of policy in order to intimidate law enforcement.
So antitrust law would call that conscious parallelism?
Perhaps, Your Honor. Perhaps.
Well, the reason I ask is because it seems this involves just every honest cop as this is in this social group and is therefore, for I guess the rest of his life, entitled to asylum.
Well, I think that's not quite right, Your Honor, and let me say a couple of things about that. The first is that whether this is a valid social group or not is not before the court in this case. The government says as much in its brief. It says if the court has concerns about the definition of a social group, that's a subject that can be dealt with on remand. The government, in fact, forfeited the issue before the immigration judge and before the board. It never briefed the issue. There's no briefing on it in this case. The IJ and the BIA did not decide the case based on whether it was a proper social group, but they simply accepted petitioner's articulation of the social group as valid and then rested solely on the on account of clause in the statute. So the first answer to your question, Your Honor, is that that question is not one this court should decide in this case. It's something that can be dealt with on remand if necessary, unless, of course, the board finds the government forfeited. But to address the merits of your question, I think it's not quite right that every honest police officer would be entitled to asylum, and that's for two reasons. The first is, it needs to be an honest police officer who took actions against cartels. That's the first. And the second reason is that not every honest police officer who took actions against cartels is going to meet the other requirements of the statute. He needs to have experienced persecution, which is a high level of harm, not mere threats, but something rising above the level of mere threats. And in this case, we have that. We have an attempted assassination attempt that clearly satisfies the persecution requirement. But not every officer is going to be able to do that. And the second is he needs to show a well-founded fear. He needs to show a genuine subjective and objective fear. And again, that's not something every officer will demonstrate. So it's not the case that everyone in the social group will be entitled to asylum. They need to meet the other requirements of the statute.
So it's a one of those case-by-case things then. You know, you've got to look at each individual, what's going on with him in particular. I assume it's him, as opposed to a general application. Which leads me to the second part, which you just mentioned, and that is, how long does this last? It's 8 years, I think, or nine, whatever it is, since he retired or something, and been out of the country, right?
Well, that's correct, Your Honor.
I just wondered, does this ever abate? Is there some point when he's just not relevant, or they don't remember him, or what?
Well, there may be, but there's been no evidence of that here. And to the contrary, the evidence shows that even after he left the country, the cartels continued to try to target him to find out where he was. And what I'd say, Your Honor, is that the regulations provide for exactly the kind of question that you asked. That's HCFR 1208.13b. And what it says is that once someone has established persecution they've experienced in the past on a protected ground, the government then has the burden to come in and show circumstances have changed so that there's no longer any kind of fear in the future. So the regulations provide exactly the kind of vehicle that Your Honor is concerned about, but the government bears that burden, not petitioner. The government bears the burden to show changed circumstances. Here the government never attempted to meet that burden with any evidence, Your Honor.
Well, the indisputable changed circumstance is that he's no longer a police officer. So he's not in the social group he defines, the principal social group he defines.
Well, he defined two social groups, Your Honor. The first
That I understand. But if the claim is, I was persecuted while I was a police officer, and I'm no longer one, how is there anything that carries over? He's just not in that group anymore. Now, I understand the argument that he was in the group of former police officers. Right. The board said with respect to the group of former police officers that there is no evidence that former police officers are targeted. And I gather you're disputing that conclusion. But that seems to me the central part of your case, because otherwise he's not in the social group that matters.
Well, I have 2 points, Your Honor. The first is that with respect to the group of police officers, as you say, It's not just being a police officer, it's having taken certain acts as a police officer.
He's not in it anymore because he's not a police officer. He's not an honest police officer. He's not a dishonest police officer. He's just not a police officer.
But with respect to the former police officer group, Your Honor, the board is simply wrong that there's no evidence that they're targeted. So there was documentary evidence that the board ignored.
That has to be your strongest point.
Well, I do think it's a strong point, Your Honor. The first is that there was a former top narcotics officer of the Mexican Federal Police who, by the way, described the silver or lead policy, and he was ultimately assassinated after he retired from the force outside his house in McAllen, Texas, where he'd moved after retiring. The second is examples of cartels leaving notes next to dismembered bodies, including of a prison guard, warning others and threatening people who dare to mess with the cartels. The third is a shooting attack by a drug cartel on the family of a soldier who died in trying to apprehend a drug lord. So again, that's an example of, you know, they aren't targeting a current officer. That officer had already passed away. They're targeting the family of that officer. And the fourth example is the brutal killing of a brother of a former Mexican prosecutor. This evidence was all before the board in the record and is just entirely ignored, Your Honor, and We don't think the board's opinion can be sustained on the basis of that purported finding. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
Certainly, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Hayes.
Good morning again, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Timothy Hayes on behalf of the Attorney General. In this case, the agency found insufficient both the quantum and the specificity of the evidence adduced by the petitioner to show that he was or would be harmed because of a protected ground. Petitioner posited two social groups before the board, or the immigration judge in particular. One was honest police officers who refused to accept bribes, and the second was a group of former police officers. As to the first group, as this court said in Pavlik, it's the conduct, it's got to be the status as a member of a subset of police officers that makes you a particular social group. It can't just be targeted as the conduct of a police officer. And that's what the IJ found here. She said, if petitioner can show he was attacked as part of a broader aim of targeting honest police officers to intimidate all officers into accepting bribes, this might bring his claim into more of a status claim rather than a personal dispute. But the evidence he presented before her suggested he was targeted specifically as retribution for particular investigations.
Well, let's go to what the board said about the group of ex-police officers. He's in that group, at least under this circuit's precedent.
Yes, Your Honor.
All the board said about that is there's no evidence that the Mexican drug lords target former police officers. And RRD says that that's simply wrong, right? That there is some evidence. The board's statement that there's no evidence is, well, can't be supported by substantial evidence if it's just flat wrong. So is it flat wrong or is it true?
There is some documentary evidence in the record that shows that a variety of police officers are targeted. Some of the news articles do include.
Right. So the board statement is flat wrong.
Well, I'm reading the board statement, Your Honor, and the one I'm looking to, and you might be looking at a different one, I'm not sure. It says, nor has the respondent established a well-founded fear of persecution on account of his status as a former police officer, where he did not experience persecution after leaving the police force. That's true. The record does not show persecution.
There's evidence of threats of being pursued, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe his family stayed for an additional 6 months after he left the police force, and there was some indication in the record that youths...
And while he was still there, people were looking for him.
And while he was still there, yes, Your Honor. And then he left, and then there was a period of 6 months where he was in the United States and his family was here, and there was some situations where he believed that cartels were still after him. Yeah. But I think the board says, this is what Judge Easterbrook was getting to, the record does not show persecution of former police officers. The definition of persecution has two components in the regulation. One is you have to show that you're singled out as an individual for some reason. The other one is a pattern or practice claim, where you show that there's a pattern or practice of certain people that are targeted. My understanding is this is not a pattern or practice claim. This is, I will be singled out because of my social group claim. And he hasn't shown evidence that he will be singled out beyond what Your Honor's just said. I mean, we have 7.5 years that have passed, and there's been no evidence that anything has happened to suggest that the cartels are still after him.
Well, isn't the relevant time for our evaluation the time that he applied for asylum? Because otherwise you get into the changed circumstance and the shifted burden of proof.
That's correct, Your Honor. And the proper mechanism to show that there would be some sort of change, you're right, Your Honor. But the board has used it a lot to suggest that there hasn't been much of a change, but you're right. At the time of the immigration judge, I believe that hearing was in 2010. He left in May of 2004, so that means the last threat was probably May 2005, so you'd still have 5 years of no threats, at least up until the record. Now, if there were, the motion to reopen would be the proper mechanism to put that evidence before the board, saying that threats have continued. Here's my evidence on that.
What's the status of his family?
My understanding is his family is still here, but I don't know for sure. They are not part of his overall claim, I don't believe.
The children are both U.S. citizens?
Yes, they are. That's right. His wife gave birth on U.S. soil.
But she is not.
No, she's not. T- switching gears a little bit to the money or bullets policy, there was a lot of suggestion that the board made a statement as a matter of law that it doesn't believe that this policy exists. That's simply not true. This is an evidentiary failure. That's what this case is. I think the board, and they're right in saying that the board left it open. Yes, it's possible that there could be a group comprised of police officers. It's just that in this case, in this particular case, there isn't enough evidence to show that his status as a police officer, as opposed to his conduct in particular investigations, motivated the perpetrators that he believes would harm him to harm him. And
doesn't just the sheer number of incidents involving him while he was still a police officer suggest this is more than just a particularized kind of revenge? He works all over Mexico, right?
Yes, Your Honor. I agree that in this case there seems to be an excessive amount of targeting towards him. I do agree with that. The problem I have is, particularly with the honest, uncorrupt police officer's particular social group claim, is he was saying that he's in approximately 15% of the federal police officers are like him, do the job like him, have not accepted a bribe like him. But when asked, and this is at page 214 and 215 of the record, what has happened to them? Do they experience a kind of pattern that you have seen? Probably, I don't know. I can't speak for them. The record evidence that we have does not say that just uncorrupt police officers are targeted. It doesn't even suggest that. It suggests that police officers, as the status of the state, are targeted because they're trying to send a message that we will not bow down to state force. So there's really a problem of evidence here where even his testimony, if his testimony is a little bit more specific about what happened to other people in his particular group, you might the evidence might compel the conclusion that, yeah, it's his social group, his status as a social group, not his conduct. But I don't think there's enough evidence in this case to do that based on his testimony alone. And the documentary evidence isn't specific enough to his circumstances to show that either.
What indications do we have that the board took into account the question of so-called mixed motives?
Well, there are two indications. One is the immigration judge's decision itself at footnote 3 before she gets into if he showed it a status versus conduct. She talks about mixed motive and she recognizes it. The board itself, too, at the very when it summarizes the IJ's decision, it says the immigration judge found that the respondent did not meet his burden of establishing his membership in a group or any other protected ground was or will be at least one central reason for persecuting the respondent. And they cite the part of the U.S. Code that the Real ID Act amended that talks about the at least one central reason standard. Now, I will say that they didn't sort of weigh different things and say, well, this is 40% personal retribution and this is 60% social group, but they're not required to do that. They're just required to state the standard, and the presumption is that they applied the standard correctly, and there's nothing here that indicates they didn't apply it correctly.
There was one reference, I think you made it, to someone who was basically assassinated when they were in the United States.
I believe there was a news article about that, yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, that's a curious result. If someone gets asylum and they're still after them.
I don't know
if that's true or not. I just look at it as something that's a huge problem, and obviously it's horrible in Mexico. They captured this big cartel leader here, and someone says, well, it's so well organized, it's not going to stop anything. So,
border states have serious issues sometimes with security with these cartels, and I think the case brings up some interesting policy questions because you have to kind of address, not necessarily in this case, but the broader thing is whether you're going to allow honest police officers to claim asylum in developed countries and what that would do to the underdeveloped countries if you allow that. And now, like I've said, the board presumed it here, and they would allow it in this case, presumably. It's just that it was an evidentiary failure. But I think there are some sort of broader policy issues as to whether the Refugee Act is even meant to protect that. And unless there are further questions, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Price?
Thank you, Your Honor. The first point is that in addition to the documentary evidence that I referred to, I just want to underscore that petitioner's own testimony talked about the risk that he faced even after he left the force. That testimony was credited by the IJ and the BIA, but then it's ignored in their opinion. And this court's precedents are clear, and we cite them in our reply brief, that ordinarily credible evidence by a petitioner is sufficient to sustain that petitioner's burden. And there's no reason at all why the board should be permitted simply to ignore that evidence that the IJ deemed credible and as it did here. The second thing I just want to point out, Judge Easterbrook, you pointed to the board's reasoning on page 2 of our appendix and 2 of the board's opinion, in which the board says that the record does not show persecution of former police officers. And we've talked about already how the record, in fact, does show that persecution of former police officers. But I also want to point out that the board seems to be relying on the IJ's opinion at page 9. And I think if you flip to that opinion, it really puts in stark relief the problem in this case. What the IJ says is the circumstantial evidence suggests that he was specifically targeted as retribution for particular investigations, and here's the evidence. According to the respondent, while living discreetly in a small town, people came looking for him specifically. That's not a lack of evidence. All that does is show that petitioner's harm is well-founded and that he is likely to suffer persecution in the future. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Case number 7.